This message comes from NPR sponsor Mattress Firm. Do you get the quality sleep you need? Mattress Firm will find you the right bed for your best rest with their wide selection of quality mattresses at every price. Get matched at Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. Sleep at night.
Hello, hello. I'm Brittany Luce, and you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, a show about what's going on in culture and why it doesn't happen by accident. Spring is basically here, and for many of us, it marks the beginning of wedding season. And nobody does weddings quite like Jennifer Lopez. She's been engaged 6 times in real life, and on screen, she's tied the knot a lot.
So let's just do it. Let's just get married right now.
I do.
And I'm not the only one who's noticed this pattern, which brings me to today's guest, New York Magazine features writer Rachel Handler.
Not only had I seen like 10 movies where she got married, but I had seen 4 movies where she planned a wedding. And I was like, that's really strange and fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of like your Jerry Seinfeld moment. Like, exactly. Weddings. What's up with that?
What's up with that?
What's up with that? Now, this was a conversation I had with Rachel last year after she wrote an article for New York Magazine where she calls these 4 movies the J-Lo wedding industrial complex canon. It starts with The Wedding Planner.
Nothing is going to come close to the heights of The Wedding Planner, which to me is like rom-com perfection.
And then Monster-in-Law.
There's definitely like just this idea about like sort of women warring with each other, this idea of like striving. There's only room for one woman in a man's life.
And in 2022, she gave us a wedding canon double feature, Marry Me.
Marry Me was just like built by an algorithm.
I do not speak on that film. And Shotgun Wedding.
Shotgun Wedding was like fine.
And the J-Lo bridal train is still chugging along. Last month, Lopez concluded the This Is Me Now triptych, her own 3-act project inspired by her rekindled relationship with actor Ben Affleck. There's the album, This Is Me Now.
A woman in love is what I grew up wanting to be.
Then there's the movie musical, This Is Me Now, a love story.
They tried to hide their romance, but their love shined too bright.
And the documentary tracking the making of the album and the film, The Greatest Love Story Never Told.
I'm writing it, I'm choreographing it, dancing in it, singing in it.
Altogether, these projects were self-funded in the ballpark of $20 million. So it's safe to say that Lopez is invested in the image of herself as a bride. But why? In honor of these recent additions to the J-Lo Wedding Industrial Complex canon, I'm revisiting my conversation with Rachel Handler, looking at what these films do for J-Lo's brand and what they say about us. Rachel, welcome to It's Been a Minute.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be on.
Let's dig into this canon.
Let's.
What were some of the aesthetic or emotional themes that you noticed?
I loved that in each movie, she had a sad dinner when she was single. Like, they sort of painted her as this, like, tragic figure. Like, in The Wedding Planner, she sat down in, like, hard jeans, like, hard denim, in front of a TV alone and ate a microwave meal. I also loved in each of her films, there was a best friend whose sole purpose was to say something along the lines of, like, I'm really worried about you. You haven't been laid in 6 years.
I don't trust a man who gets regular pedicures.
Mary, you haven't been on a date in 2 years.
Your point?
That was their primary job. And in each one, someone says something like, I wish it was just the two of us getting married alone on a beach.
Okay, let's talk about this beach theme. Because something that comes up in the canon a lot, even in Shotgun Wedding, which was meant to feature a beach wedding. It's like, I was paying attention at that point because I had read your piece.
Yeah.
Before I watched Shotgun Wedding. So it's like, okay. I'm like, what is she going to say in this film? Because she's already getting married.
She's already on the beach.
So what does she want?
I wanted it to just be you and me in the middle of the ocean.
And for the 400th time, that would have killed my mother.
Ugh. I was dead.
I died when that happened. I was like, no way. No way.
No way. But like literally every single film, it comes up that the main character or her partner, they're planning this big wedding, but privately. Privately, they want an intimate beach
wedding. Yep. It's mentioned or inferred mm-hmm. in some way in all four of these films. Mm-hmm. What is up with that? What does that mean?
I think it's sort of a way of telegraphing, like, they love each other so much, they don't need any of this bull sort of mm-hmm. extra stuff going on, but they're being forced by sort of powers against their will, whether it's their families, whether it's societal expectations. Like, someone is like, I don't actually care about the wedding, which is like a way of sort of telegraphing an inner depth. Except, of course, in The Wedding Planner, wherein that's her job to plan right. these big weddings, but she right. still has a sort of sardonic, like, eye-rolly vibe about the whole job the whole time. She's like, this is important, but also these people are insane.
I Honestly Love You by Olivia Newton-John was their wedding song. Puts them in the 14-month divorce ranking.
Like, she's just so cool.
She's a cool girl.
She doesn't care. She's a yeah. cool girl.
But actually, in one of the movies, it's the groom who wants to have the one on the beach, too, so he's a cool girl. You know, and that's, as I say in the movie, that's feminism.
But also, like, the other kind of wedding, as you mentioned, like, the we love each other so much, we don't need anything else. We're so cool. We can just get married to the beach in linen, suits. Like, it's fine. That's another type of perfect wedding.
Oh, 100%. It's like an Instagram perfect, right? It's like, oh, we just went, the two of us, on this private beach. It all feeds into the same idea, really. Like, the real sort of like galaxy brain take is like, you can go to the courthouse, don't photograph it, don't tell anyone. That, if she's doing that in a movie, I'm like, all right, you know, she really does love this guy. But other than that, I'm like, all right, there's some part of you that really wants to have this wedding, this production.
If a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it.
Exactly.
If Jennifer Lopez in a film got married at court and invited no one, did it really happen?
Well, that almost happens in The Wedding Planner. She like goes to the courthouse to marry her like weird childhood crush.
Right, Massimo.
Yep. She doesn't do it. She can't bring herself to do it. It's too sad.
And you didn't get married. She's not married.
She does not love me. She loves you, Steph.
In your pre-interview with our producer, Liam, you mentioned that you also think that each of these films are distinct products of their eras. And I agree with you, and I love that take. But I want to hear more about that. Can you start with The Wedding Planner on that?
So I think that The Wedding Planner has a very clear pre-9/11 sensibility.
Right, because it ends so positively and like wraps up in this uncomplicated way.
Yes, it feels hopeful. It feels like all the rom-coms feel before 9/11, right? Because after 9/11, it's like you can't really sell something like The Wedding Planner to a jaded, you know, traumatized population in the same way. Right. And so I think there's like an innocence and a hopefulness to The Wedding Planner and to those earlier rom-coms that just, you just can't do that anymore. You know, it just wouldn't sell. It wouldn't work.
You know, also in this first movie, Jennifer Lopez plays the titular wedding planner.
She does.
Which was kind of a new job at that point in time. And that job is very much in service of the wedding industrial complex. Like, you know, 50 years ago, weddings weren't as big of a thing. Like, you wouldn't even get a wedding planner because they'd be planned by the bride's mother and possibly done at home. And yeah, it's interesting to me that the job itself was becoming glamorized right at the moment that Jennifer Lopez is playing the role of a wedding planner in a film.
Absolutely. I think it's 2000 or 2001, but it feels really 90s. It feels really like Father of the Bride. Let's spend all our money on this one perfect day.
Hey, wedding woman, you did some job. My girl's going to knock him dead. Aren't you, Sligo?
Marry Me is a good, you know, sort of horror movie example of a wedding manufactured for social media.
Do you guys, like, talk ever?
It's just publicity. It's not real.
That's a good point. And I mean, also in Shotgun Wedding, there's like the, I guess to give some background on the plot, it's about this wedding that Jennifer Lopez's character is having with her soon-to-be husband. And the wedding is interrupted by this band of pirates who are, you know, trying to hold the wedding party ransom.
No need to be scared. As long as everybody follows directions, no one gets hurt.
And like, even that felt to me like metaphorically, like how I think some people saw COVID as like an assault on their wedding plans.
100%.
Like this unforeseen thing that ruined your special day.
You're right. It does feel like a pure id expression of someone who had their wedding ruined by COVID.
Oh, also I'll say Shotgun Wedding reminds me of like kind of a shift in what marriage used to be. Marriage was thought to be this like new phase of your life where you leave your parents' house, you begin your sexual life, marriage, I imagine, was a pretty stark transition back then. But now many couples, you know, who arrive at the altar have already passed many of those milestones. They live together. They've obviously been boinking for some time. Mm-hmm. And some people get married long after they have children together.
Right.
And even in the film, there's a point where Jennifer Lopez's character says, you know, like, I'm not some blushing bride.
I'm a grown woman. I don't want my daddy walking me down the aisle.
It's interesting, though, because even though, like, you're not going to get, like, the cold ice bath of, I imagine, what married life might have felt like 50, 60, 70 years ago, there's still this idea that, like, it's fine for them to kind of be a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
You see in the film that they say, like, we fought more in the past few months than we had in the previous 4 years of our relationship. That's something that I've heard from people.
You totally. Know,
get married, they fight more when they're planning their wedding than they ever have.
Right.
And people say this, there's this response, this common refrain, like, if you can get through this tough time together, you've got a solid relationship. Kind of feels like, on some level, culturally, there's meaning derived from the painfulness of planning a wedding. Like,
it's twisted.
Do we still need a wedding to be a painful experience in order to make it meaningful?
I guess. I mean, that it's very twisted. And I had the same experience where people kept saying that to me. And actually, a bigger reason I didn't want to get married is because I didn't want to engage in that process. And I didn't want to, like, stress myself out unnecessarily and all of that. So I made my husband plan the whole thing. I told him if he wanted to get married, it was on him to plan the wedding.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It worked for you?
It
worked, yeah. I mean, I got to weigh in on, like, fun things that I cared about. Like, I got to be like, oh, I want, like, this food, or I want, like, this DJ or whatever. But I was like, you have to do all the annoying stuff if you want to get married. And he was like, okay.
You had the groom experience.
I did have the groom experience. But that in Shotgun Wedding, he's the one who also plans the wedding. So I was like, okay, I see what you're doing here. Like, you know, elder millennial feminist energy for sure.
Right. We're like the professional baseball player groom.
Yeah.
Is like sitting and hot gluing like Christmas tree lights to pineapples to make the centerpieces perfect.
I gotta finish these centerpieces and rearrange the seating chart now that Sean decided to show up.
So Jennifer Lopez, obviously famously a bride in both her real life and in her work. But she's not just playing these roles.
No.
She often produces these films.
Exactly.
Shotgun Wedding is a film that would have to have been in motion either when she was engaged to Alex Rodriguez or engaged to Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
So on some level, she knew that she was going to be planning a wedding in real life at the same time that this film was going to be in production or coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like with Shotgun Wedding, there was sort of like a sly wink from Jennifer Lopez. Like, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing in real life. I wonder, like, what is the communication through this over it? Like, what is she maybe trying to communicate to us or possibly working out for herself? I mean, you can't know, right? I don't know if you guys are like on the phone texting or not.
Yes, we're texting right now. Yeah, I'll ask her. Honestly, I can't know, but I have to imagine that what's interesting about Shotgun Wedding is, as to sort of complete the four movies, it is the most sort of openly anti-wedding industrial complex film. It's sort of about how it's not worth it. It tears people apart. Mm-hmm. It's silly. It's very openly like against even her characters. Like, I never wanted any of this, you know. And so I think on some level, she must be grappling with what that means and why she's so compelled to have these weddings over and over, to have these giant productions over and over. I'm sure she's like on a subconscious level exploring that. So, I think she's got levels.
Coming up, what J-Lo gets out of perpetual bridehood and why we need different kinds of stories about love. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit their website to get a quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. Then just choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Homes.com. When you're home shopping as a parent, you have lots of questions about local schools. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by a dedicated in-house research team. It's also you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework. This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
You know, we've been talking. I got married last year. It seems that you got married very recently. And I don't know what your experience was as somebody who kind of took a backseat to their wedding planning. Mm-hmm. But I can attest that much of the modern messaging around being a bride, which really turned me off and made wedding planning miserable for me, is the idea that you can be a princess or a celebrity for a day.
Oh God!
But yeah. Jennifer Lopez is already, she's obviously already a celebrity.
Yeah.
But she's also already functionally a princess.
I was going to say that.
Every day.
Uh-huh.
She's very rich and she doesn't need one as a display of wealth.
Yeah.
Which is what weddings definitely can be for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
What might a person like J-Lo get out of being a bride, like on screen in that way, or wanting to be seen as being a bride?
I really think she sees these weddings as a direct expression of like love and worth. We've all followed J-Lo. We've all wanted her to be happy. You know, like yes. we're all like rooting yes. for her, you know. And I think now she seems like she's happy with Ben and that's great, but it took her, you know, four marriages to figure that out. And mm-hmm. I really think she's like an old school, like she thinks that a big wedding is incredibly romantic.
It feels like the natural endpoint of the idea that like success is nothing unless you have somebody to share it with.
Yes, which is my favorite Beyonce quote, by the way, where she says like, you know, I don't remember the exact quote, but she talks about like, what's the point of any of this if you don't have someone to share it with? And I think it's fascinating to look at these movies, you know, juxtaposed with her life and think about, you know, what is she like roiling over at 3 a.m?
I wonder, you know, looking past the personal, what does being a perpetual bride mean for J-Lo's brand?
Maybe part of it is that she, to sell the idea of J-Lo, right? It's like the personality, the persona that is J-Lo. I think she's like an amazing actress who doesn't often get parts that are worthy of her. Like think about Hustlers. She's so good in Hustlers.
We got to start thinking like these Wall Street guys. You see what they did to this country? They stole from everybody. You ever think about when they come into the club? That's stolen money.
She rarely gets to do something like that. And I wonder if like she's sort of leaning harder into this rom-com J-Lo persona as she gets older because she feels like that's where she's going to get the most roles or have the most success. Mm. And part of that is this concept, like you're saying, of being like this traditional girly bride who's selling that fantasy to people. I don't know.
I hadn't thought about that that way. Like she's not getting the Amy Adams phone calls.
Exactly, which is crazy. I love her range too. You know, I love Jennifer. I love her in Enough. I love when she, you know, I love when she gets to hold a gun. You know,
I was going to say, maybe that's the next article.
I said in Shotgun Wedding, I was like, this marries the two genres. She holds a gun and she gets married.
You know, we spent a lot of time in this conversation parsing J-Lo's artistic messaging, mm-hmm. but she's releasing these films into an adoring marketplace. Mm-hmm. So what are these films telling us about ourselves?
Oh my God. I mean, this is where it gets a little dark for me. I do think it's a little bit malevolent to make these movies over and over, especially to sell this fantasy over and over to like a rapidly dying globe where, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and an economic crisis. And I do think there's obviously a massive place for escapism and humor and joy, of course, but like, you know, what does it tell us about ourselves when we just want to keep watching the same movie over and over again, where like a beautiful, very wealthy woman has like an amazing wedding to the man of her dreams. And like I said, it's unimaginative at best. It's claustrophobic at worst. Like it's just, it's worth questioning everything. As I was writing this piece, I was thinking to myself, you know, like, damn, like we need some new myths. We need some new stories.
I'm like wondering, what is it even, look like? I mean, maybe it looks like, you know, the woman who refused a wedding for 17 years.
I don't know.
And gets her husband to plan the entire thing.
I think a lot about, this is going to get like a little maybe pretentious, but Elif Badiman wrote a profile of Celine Sciamma in The New Yorker that I think about
the filmmaker.
All the time. Yes, who did Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and she talked about this idea of like female storytelling. What does it look like when a woman, the traditional arc of a movie, the hero's journey, is like the same exact as the arc of the male orgasm.
Yes.
And she talked about storytelling as a circle, a female storytelling as a circle, sort of concentric circles getting smaller and smaller and going in to the middle of a story. And that's the structure of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It's not a male orgasm. It's a circle. It like changed my life. It changed my brain. And I think it's powerful to reimagine this type of thing.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, literally the height of a story in traditional storytelling is called the climax.
Yeah.
But I mean, what is a wedding if not the, in story terms, the most climactic point of a relationship? As we traditionally think about it. And the veil has been, I think, removed from most of society's eyes with regard to the fact that marriages, you know, don't last forever. We all know that, like, the meaty, juicy, exciting parts of a relationship are the things that take place long after that climactic point has been reached.
Exactly. And I do think, you know, to sort of put a finer, more annoying point on it, I do think that, like, that these movies about two people finding each other, having this wedding, and then like going off into their lives alone, this is just sort of reinforcing this really toxic idea of American individualism that has arguably gotten us to the place that we're at now, at the sort of at the beginning of a crumbling empire, because we're not taught about the collective. We're not taught. We don't watch stories where the romance is about a group of people coming together and helping each other. It's about two people being like, and now we're going to buy our house and we're going to have our kid and we're going to live our little life alone. You know what I mean? Like love and success is so individualistic in these films, and we need to reimagine. I wish that we could move in the Celine Sciamma direction. Like, I want a J.Lo Celine Sciamma collab.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for talking with me about this. This was like everything that I could have hoped for.
Oh my God, me too.
To unpack this.
This was so fun. I would do this all day. This was really, really fun.
And congratulations.
You too.
Thanks again to New York Magazine features writer Rachel Handler. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Liam McBain,
Corey Antonio Rose.
Our editor is
Jessica Plachek.
Engineering support came from
Trey Watson.
Our executive producer is
Verilyn Williams.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
Did you like this episode? Did it make you think of someone who just planned a wedding? Send this to them. Sharing our show with your friends helps get the word out, and we really appreciate it. All right, that's it for this episode of It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Capital One offers checking accounts with no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC. This message comes from NPR sponsor Anthropic. Their Claude 3 model family is enterprise-ready AI. Haiku is fast and cost-effective. Sonnet perfectly balances skill with speed. And Opus sets new intelligence industry benchmarks. Visit Anthropic.com/Claude.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wildcard, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.